Great morning, everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of Thank God for Monday. I'm Brother Greg Cellini, the Franciscan Brothers of Brooklyn, and the Office of Mission, Ministry, and Interfaith Dialogue at St. Francis College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. My great pleasure to be back again with you today. The purpose of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to inspire you, our audience, to take personal responsibility for your professional satisfaction. We want to provide you hope, healing, and peace in these unprecedented, turbulent, uncertain times. Motivate you to search deep inside yourself in the quest for fulfillment. Listeners, it's really up to you as how to utilize the information we provide today and take full accountability for the decisions you make and the resulting outcome. Now, one of the goals of our show, Thank God for Monday, is to introduce role models of people who take very bold steps in their work lives. This is a very special time. The Saturday just before National Dentist Day on Wednesday, March 6th. National Dentist Day has been described as a day to celebrate the women and men who keep our chompers chomping, our gnashers gnashing, and our whites pearly. Having good teeth is critical to maintaining one's sound health. And as such, we have with us today a very, very special guest. His name is Dr. James Sconzo. Dr. Jim has a unique connection with Seton Hall in that he attended Uppsala College, a bitter rival of Seton Hall back in the day. Much more important, he has been a doctor of dental medicine for over 40, yes, I said 40 years. He also has the distinction of people traveling many miles from various parts of New York State to obtain his services. Great morning and welcome to Thank God for Monday, Dr. Jim.
Good morning, Brother Greg. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
The honor is all ours. Kindly share with the listeners and me from what city and state you're speaking from today.
This morning, Brother Greg, I'm from speaking from Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, isn't this amazing? We're both in the beautiful borough of Brooklyn this morning. Oh, that's awesome. Dr. Jim, we could spend hours talking about you, your amazing practice, this incredible life you've had. We only have 30 minutes. We're jumping right into the deep end of the pool, certainly. We're curious, the listeners and me, were you born in Brooklyn and did you there obtain your primary and secondary education?
Greg, I was born in Brooklyn, and a little tidbit, I actually practice out of the house that I was born in, brought into.
Oh,
that's
my
where my
God.
Practices. I attended Good Shepherd Catholic School for grammar school. I went to Our Lady Help of Christians in Brooklyn here for Boy Scouts. And for high school, I went to Nazareth Regional High School.
Wow.
So I'm born and bred in Brooklyn.
Oh, some incredible education. That is for sure. Now, you become a senior in high school, certainly. You've got a decision to make. Do you go out and work? Do you go to college? I mentioned that you went to Uppsala, but talk a little about your Uppsala days, certainly, and what you studied there, please.
So at Uppsala, I wasn't sure at first, but very quickly I got into marine biology. I love the ocean, love the water. So I ended up studying marine biology, and I graduated with a BS in marine biology, and I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau.
Let's peel the onion on this a little bit. Did you have your love of water right from an early age, from living there in Brooklyn? I don't know if you were near the water.
I did. Actually, our parents used to bring us over to Reese Park in Queens, right over the bridge, Marine Parkway Bridge. And we went to the ocean there almost every weekend. And then we brought up at a house out on Fire Island where I was a lifeguard out there and just loved the ocean waves and surfing.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Now, you born and bred in Brooklyn, you went to school in New Jersey, though. This is very interesting. At Uppsala, did you commute there? Did you live there?
I actually lived on campus.
Oh, wow. Must have been a great experience. That's a wonderful part of New Jersey, that's for sure.
Many times I say it's the best 4 years of my life.
Ah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, certainly. And it sounds like Seton Hall was a rival. Would that have been in basketball or maybe even football
That
back
was
then?
basketball and football. Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's terrific.
And
Okay.
actually had my first concert there.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. So you graduate Uppsala. You've got this wonderful undergraduate degree. What did you do professionally immediately after earning this great degree?
Oh, that's great. Great question. I've thought about that. Initially, I took a month with a good friend of mine, went cross country by a Greyhound bus, very
Oh, wow.
Ireland. After that, I came back and I really wasn't sure what I was going to do, Greg. And I ended up spending about 8 months doing construction and I loved it. I've always loved working with my hands and I just wasn't sure if it was going to be the type of job to sustain or support a family. So I ended up, my father's a dentist, was a dentist. I wasn't going into dentistry. I wanted to go into marine biology, but at that point, there wasn't, all I would be doing is looking into microscopes and not really diving in the water. So
Wow.
I ended up trying to get into dental school. I had all the courses being a biology major, and I studied my tail off to pass the DATs, and I got accepted to a couple of schools. And once I got there, I was in love.
Oh, that is so wonderful. I want to give the listeners a context because you look so young, you sound so young. But was this about the mid-70s when you graduated Uppsala and this kind of discernment was happening?
Yes, it was actually 77 when I graduated, and then
Okay,
a year
terrific.
off, and then I went to dental school. I went to Tufts University School of Dental Medicine in Boston, and that was in 78. I started dental school in 78.
Wow. Okay, let's back up a second if we can just a bit because you are doing this construction work. You're thinking maybe it's not sustainable for our family, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just curious, what else went into this decision? And was it a difficult decision? This may help some of the listeners, maybe who are on the fence about doing one thing or another at this point in their career.
It was a difficult decision. I had a good friend that went to Mexico to become a physician, go to medical school, and
Ah.
I was like, "Wow, he's doing that. What am I going to do?" And hemming and hawing, and I just dove right in, and thank God it worked out.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt about that. So you mentioned that you attended Tufts Dental School. Is that where you went? And I'm just curious. What process did you use to say Tufts is the one versus maybe other dental schools in New Jersey or New York, other places?
Great question, Greg. I got into NYU and I got into Tufts. I just wanted to venture out, check out a different city, get away from friends that I knew here that I thought might distract me from my studies. So I had to get away and just seclude myself up there.
Okay. So Tufts, am I right, is somewhere in Massachusetts. I don't know if it's Boston or
It's
on the
actually
outskirts.
downtown Boston.
Oh, wow. Okay. Boston, a beautiful city, no question about that. And naturally, you're living there. So you transplant from Brooklyn to Boston. Anything about that transition you want to talk about? Was it easy, one big city to kind of another bigger city or?
Greg, whenever you take a leap of faith like that, it's always a little scary. Not knowing where you're going, what you're getting into, no friends. It's a challenge at first, but I'm able to meet a lot of great people in my class, and we actually helped each other out. It was a class of about 140, but we really melded together very well, and everybody would help each other out.
Oh, that's terrific. Please talk more about this Tufts experience as far as the courses that you had to take. Was this a 1 year, a multiple year? And what were some of the courses maybe that you had to take as part of this dental school?
So as far as dental school goes, my school was a 3-year school, but most schools were 4-year schools. But we went right through. We went through the winter, went through the summers. So we
Oh,
really had a good
wow.
time off. As far as courses that we took, the first year we took almost all the courses that medical school students would take: anatomy, physiology, chemistry, biochem, organic chem,
Wow, this is a rigorous
biology.
program. Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Can I assume, and maybe this is an unfair question, but I'll ask it anyhow. The courses that one would need to take today, if we have some aspiring dentists listening, pretty much the same, would you say, or has the education changed drastically?
Education has changed drastically, but the courses are basically the same. It's
Okay.
all the biology courses, chemistry courses, organic chem, biochem. That's kind of stayed the same. I think just the level of these courses have just tremendously increased.
Oh, I would imagine, certainly, no question about it. Okay, so you're at Tufts. You have this wonderful 3-year program. You complete the program. And then what happens from there? Do you need to take a test, or do you just become a dentist? You become a doctor of dental medicine, or how does this all work, please?
So back then, we would graduate with our degree in dental medicine and we could start practicing right away. Today, in most states, you could still do that. Though in New York State, you actually have to take a residency before you can get your license in New
Oh.
York. So if you're planning on practicing in New York, you have to do a residency at this point. Many of the other states, you don't need to do a residency, but Greg, I'm actually the chief of the residency program in Brooklyn
Wow.
at NYP, Brooklyn Methodist Hospital. And I highly encourage anybody that graduates from any dental school in the country to do a residency program.
What does this program entail? I can tell you highly recommend it. What is this all about,
It
please?
entails doing practicing dentistry on patients in a hospital setting. So
Oh.
you have other dentists, I have about 25 other dentists that oversee the residents to help them, mentor them, see how they're doing. Can I help you with this? If they have questions, if they need help, if they get into trouble, you have somebody there to back them up and basically educate them. It's almost another year of school, but they're getting paid to do this residency. And it's in a hospital setting where you have a lot of cancer patients, trauma patients. So you're doing a lot of dental work on types of cases that you would never get in a private practice.
Wow. Oh, it sounds like it really expands one's experience. And not only that, but depth of empathy and things of that nature, certainly. Wow. The light bulb just went on. I really never thought of a dentist in a hospital setting, but naturally, very, very much needed. No question about that. So you come out of Tufts, and did you immediately open then your own practice? Where did you go from there, and what was your discernment still like at that point?
So again, Greg, I went into a residency program. At that point, we didn't have to, but I did go into a residency program
Wow.
for a year. I went to Kings County Hospital and did my residency there, big trauma hospital. After graduating from there, I actually worked at a couple of different private practices. Even though my father was a dentist in Brooklyn, I had the mindset that I couldn't get any help from him. I had to do it all on my own. So I worked for about 2 or 3 years at multiple different offices and learning what I liked from one doctor and what I didn't like. And after 2 or 3 years, I almost signed a contract with another dentist in Brooklyn to be a partner with him. And I said, what am I doing? My father's here. Got along great with my dad and ended up starting to practice with him. And I'm so happy I did.
For one. Now, this is fascinating because I never would have thought when you were talking about partnering with someone that there would be a contract. But I guess if indeed one dentist partners with another, there's got to be some legal framework to kind of see what the terms of agreement are, et cetera, et cetera.
Especially today, yes. when I first got out 40 years ago, contracts weren't really that important. But if you were going to buy a practice today, absolutely. If you're going to associate with another dentist or thinking about buying another dentist practice, there's all sorts of lawyers and legal stuff you have to do. I just went through it. I've been practicing for 42 years and I just sold my practice to one of my former residents. Great, great guy. And we were both amazed at all the legal stuff we had to go to, where we were ready just to shake hands and call it a deal. But
Wow, that's really something. Now, I didn't realize, and congratulations certainly on the selling of the practice, but I didn't realize that your late father and you worked together all those years. How was it like working with your father?
again, I was blessed because he was interchange ready for me to make any changes I wanted to do in the practice, whether it was cosmetic or equipment wise. So he was very easy to get along with. I actually practiced with him for about 6 years and then he retired. And I just kept going, and so the practice has been, it's been a family practice for over 60 years in Brooklyn.
Wow. What a legacy. What a run there. That is amazing. Now, did you say, are you retired or rather than doing this work with the residents?
No, I'm probably working harder now than I ever worked, Brother Greg. Actually, I'm actually working with the dentist that bought my practice out. So at
Okay.
this point, I'm just really doing the dentistry. As far as dental practices go, you have to wear many hats. You're the doctor, you're the accountant, you're the lawyer, you're the PR person, so there's a lot that goes into it. So at this point, I am very lucky where I'm just doing the dentistry on patients that I love. It's what I love to do, and I'll do it for many years coming along.
Oh, that is so wonderful. You having this practice, this awesome practice for so many decades, I would imagine you have a steady clientele of customers that still want to continue to go to you. So it sounds like they're still able to do that.
At this point, we have 3 and 4 generations going.
Oh, my
So it
goodness.
is a pure family practice.
That is absolutely amazing. It's funny you mention about when you own the practice that you wear so many hats. I would imagine, in particular, the public relations, the marketing hat has to sometimes be a little challenging. You're doing the work and yet you're trying to market yourself at the same time. So I can imagine. Did you find that was challenging also, or did you find you were so great that the word of mouth just brought people your way?
Well, Greg, it's funny you asked me about tags like Instagram, Facebook, and all that. I really didn't do much of that at all. It was all internal marketing, speaking with the patients liking you and referring additional patients and family members to you.
That's awesome, certainly, no question about it. It is so evident. We've only talked for about 18 minutes, but it's so evident you love being a dentist. Let's peel the onion a little bit, though, please, Dr. Drew. What is it especially that you love about being a dentist?
Well, Greg, I'm a general practitioner, so I'm able to do various facets of dentistry. I can do fillings, crowns, veneers, gum treatments, implants, root canals, extractions, dentures. So there's a myriad and a mix. So I'm never getting bored with just doing one type of procedure. So, and I enjoy them all. Every procedure, every is different. Okay, it may sound
Wow.
like a filling's a filling, but it's not. Patients and all teeth are different, believe it or not. What I love about being a dentist, being able to give patients a smile, and in addition to their smile, their confidence back. When somebody's able to smile, and sometimes they haven't smiled for years, and you do some beautiful work there, and like you, Greg, you're smiling, and it just brings out their old personality. So.
You know, it's very fascinating because I've been a DDS's nightmare for decades, certainly. But nonetheless, I still love to smile. But it's very interesting. On a serious note, I've known people, and I'm sure you've worked on so many of them, where their teeth were not in good condition for one reason or another, And you brought them back to life, literally, because they would kind of be very introverted and not want to smile or even go out sometimes. And now you've given them a new lease on life. That's really, really wonderful. Now, no career, no profession, whether you're a Franciscan brother of Brooklyn, whether you're a dentist, certainly is perfect. What are some of the challenges that a dentist today in 2024 might be facing?
Challenges today is keeping up with the technologies that are coming out. Phenomenal pieces of equipment that really open one's eyes to what you're doing. 3D scans, microscopes that blow things up four or five times, to see loops, different implant systems that are out there. It's just trying to keep up with it. This stuff is expensive. When you're a private practice, being on your own, trying to afford this stuff, it adds up. So it's difficult financially to keep that up. I think that's why so many people are forming group practices now, to share the load.
Okay. So if I perceive the group practice, you might have four or five, I don't know how many dentists, but they're kind of share the same facility. Is that when you say a group practice? Share a little bit more about that,
Yeah,
please.
they'll share the same facility. You may have either two or three general practitioners that are in there. You're able to keep the office open longer hours and more days, or you may actually have specialists working alongside of you. So you'll have the general practice there. You may also have an endodontist that comes in to do the root canals. You may have an oral surgeon to come in. So you don't have to farm these specialized procedures out of your office, so you're keeping the funds in the office.
Oh, that is wonderful. I'm terribly, thank God for Monday listeners. I'm really very technophobic. How does someone learn all these new tech? And I don't want to say they're complex, but I'm sure they're not always easy to learn.
The learning curves can be steep. We just got an intraoral scanner, Greg, which takes an impression of teeth without all that gook in your mouth. So it's just the little camera that goes in your mouth to take an impression to make a crown. So we're learning that right now. That's a fairly smooth transition that we're having with that. But continuing education. There is not a year gone by that I've not taken 20, 30 hours of continuing education.
Wow. Oh, that's wonderful. They're just open-minded and open-hearted for that. Sadly, we could talk all day. We've only got about 8 minutes, but I still have some important questions for you. No question about it. It sounds to me you have learned a tremendous amount over the last 40 plus years as a dentist. What are some of the real valuable life lessons that this wonderful profession you've chosen have taught you?
One of the life lessons, Greg, is being able to listen carefully to what patients or people have to say. You have to be able to listen to their concerns and not just put your will on them. Okay. Be open, listen. Okay. Be open and honest to people, whether it's in dentistry or anything else. And dentistry, I need to be open and honest to what I can actually deliver for the patients. I have to be able to meet the, I have to know what their expectations are to be able to know if I can meet their expectations. Some people come in without any teeth and they're expecting to walk out, eating like anybody else does. And, denture's not going to do that. We need to educate them as to the realities of the services that we can offer them.
Wow. Fascinating. I said in the introduction that good teeth are so important to good and sound health. Does one drive the other? Is someone has good health, they basically should have good, or is it the good teeth that are imperative for the good health? What's the relationship there? And really tied into this is why is it so important that you and I, everyone, keep up going to the dentist?
Greg, I think it's intertwined. It can go either way. If you have good teeth, you're able to get your nutrition. You're able to eat the foods that we need to eat to keep our bodies healthy. Okay. If our bodies are healthy, we're able to get the food and eat everything. So it goes back and forth,
Great.
but And there's a lot of medical conditions that they say are related to teeth, gum conditions, could re be related to heart conditions,
Wow.
preterm birth weight babies could be related to periodontal disease. Diabetes and gum disease go back and forth. One can affect the other. So to answer your question, it can go both ways.
I know myself, I'm very, very blessed in that every 3 months I visit one of two dentists for a cleaning and looking at other things. And my having that great, great dental service over these decades has helped my health. There's no question about it. So we encourage the listeners to get out there to the dentist regularly and make sure that your teeth are being taken care of. We probably have a listener too that you've inspired, Dr. Jim, to think about becoming and pursuing the dental profession. What would you say to him or her, please?
My main word would be to go out and shadow a dentist. Knock on any dentist's door, say, I'm interested. I'd like to know what this is all about. Would you mind if I came in and just watched what you did, what you do on a daily basis? And go to a number of different offices. And just sit there and watch what they do. See how they interact with their staff. See how they interact with patients. See how they interact with other dentists that may be in the practice. And I was fortunate. My father was a dentist, so I kind of knew what he did. Not that I spent much time in the office at all. I really didn't watch him much at all, but if you're really not sure what it entails, I mean, most people have gone to the dentist. So, you're opening your mouth, you haven't work done, but you really want to see their interaction with patients and how they get along and ask them questions. What's their lifestyle like? What's work like? Is it a difficult job? Do you love what you do? Why do you? All the questions that you're asking me, Greg,
Oh,
be the detective.
what great advice. That shadowing would be invaluable, no question about it. Now, this coming Wednesday, March 6th, National Dentist Day, I mentioned in the opening, it's really a day to celebrate the women and men who keep our teeth in real healthy condition. I recommend the listeners and me celebrate great dentists like you this Wednesday, March 6th.
Well, the main way you can celebrate, make sure you brush and floss your teeth that day, if not every day, and just say a little prayer and thank them for the work that they do. Sometimes it's not actually apparent, oh, I got to go to the dentist, but they're there to help you out and do the best they can to keep your health well. So just send a little prayer out to them and say thank you, God, for what they do.
That is so beautiful. I've been blessed that I've had relationship with dentists, one in New Jersey for many, many years, and now one in New York, also in Brooklyn for many, many years. And having that continuity, both of these people, both of their offices really treated me so well. And again, has been part of my being able to make a transition from Jersey to New York, to be a Franciscan Brother of Brooklyn. So thank you both. Best, maybe a most important question also, how can our loyal listeners best contact you? You've given us so many nuggets already, Dr. Jim. In case anybody wants to reach out to you, please.
Greg, I can give you, I don't know what you want, whether you want a telephone number or Instagram, Facebook, or whatever.
Great, you're on Instagram and Facebook. That's wonderful. Okay, how
Yeah.
can they find you there, please?
Instagram, it's at DrMattSciascia. That's the doctor that just bought my practice. I'm
Great.
actually working with him. Instagram, Facebook, it's Sconzo and Shasha, General Cosmetic and Family Dentistry.
Terrific. So there are ways through social media. Wonderful provider. Is there an office phone number somebody could reach you at there, possibly?
Sure, the phone number is 718-339-0252.
Terrific. Listeners, no excuse. A lot of ways to get in touch with Dr. Jim. Please, please do that. And again, you and I need to say a prayer for him and all our wonderful dentists, literally around the world, on this Wednesday in particular, March 6th. And I know that this is a special time, certainly for someone else in your family. Not only is it National Dentist Day this week, but there's a special event coming up. Share with us a little bit about that, Dr. Jim, please, as we close the show.
So, Greg, next weekend, me and my brothers and sisters are flying down to Florida. It's my mother's 97th birthday.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I would love to wish her a grand 97. And, Brother Greg, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and interviewing me with this.
Oh, the honor has been all ours, Dr. Jim. Thank you for coming on. Thank God for Monday. And certainly happy birthday. And I'm on the brothers now. I'll be saying extra prayers on that very, very special day. Certainly.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, sadly, guess what? Once again, we're out of time. Greg saying our hope and prayer is that when you wake up on Monday morning, just like Dr. Jim does, you'll say, thank God for Monday. Until next week's episode, have a great week, everyone. Bye-bye.